from this life on eternally to hear the true Dharma for the benefit of all beings, to let Buddha nature shine through us freely so we can meet this world with great love and compassion, with such a motivation, such a spirit, we listen to the teachings. This session we're looking at a meditation manual by Menzan Zuiho Zenji, 18th century Soto Zen teacher, who wrote this for lay practitioners at his temple to help clarify Dogen's Zazen, which is not easy to clarify. And it's not easy to clarify Menzan's clarification of Dogen. But that's the effort this week. This Zazen manual, this instructions for how to sit universally for everyone, is called Jijyu Zamai, which is a term that Dogen uses frequently, like we chant at noon service, the Jijyu Zamai section of of Shobogenzo Bendo Wa. Jijyu Zamai, the self receiving its function, awareness, or the naturally receptive functioning awareness, or the self receiving and employing samadhi, or self-fulfilling samadhi, or self-enjoyment samadhi. These are all different translations of Jijyu Zamai, a dynamic term. And Menzan started this instruction by saying there's all these other samadhis, samadhi being one-pointed absorption in what's happening. There's names for many different samadhis, like the jewel mirror samadhi, the limitless meaning samadhi, the treasury of brightness samadhi, and many others he lists from different sutras, and he says these are all names for the same thing. So the Jijyu Zamai and the Hokyo Zamai, jewel mirror samadhi, not different, just different ways of talking about the same awareness. And Menzan says, although a great many people practice Zazen, almost all of them practice in the way of ordinary people, Shravakas or Prateka Buddhas, which we got into a long sidetrack about yesterday. I will not bring up again. Or Bodhisattvas with provisional Mahayana understanding. Those who understand this naturally receptive functioning awareness, Jijus am I, as the true enlightenment of all Buddhas are very few. That is why some hurry on their way to gain enlightenment by wrestling with koans. Wrestling with koans. So he's going to talk about different, those are already some different ways of understanding practice that miss the point of this jijiyu zamaya. So here Menzon says, some hurry on their way to gain some future enlightenment, wrestling with koans. And some might take this as a kind of sectarian statement about how Soto Zen is different from Rinzai Zen, koan, emphasizing Zen. But it's well known that Dogen was totally into these koan stories, right? The whole Sobo Genzo is kind of written around, each chapter is kind of based around one or several koan stories, these, you know, classic Zen stories. And in his extensive record, Dogen's mostly commenting on koans. He actually collected just a collection of 300 koans himself without even commenting on them, maybe as kind of a workbook to write his essays based on. And just before he left China to return to Japan, the legend is that he stayed up all night copying the Blue Cliff record to bring it back to Japan. A koan collection. So to say that Soto Zen doesn't emphasize koans is not quite right. I think what we could, from my limited understanding of Soto and Rinzai Zen and how they use koans, Rinzai Zen emphasis is you're assigned a koan by the teacher and you bring it into Zazen. When you're sitting all day, you take up a koan and you hold it and you never let it leave your mind. You know, a story or the central piece of a story, that is your meditation object without veering off it. And focusing one pointedly on a kind of an inconceivable, strange story that holding it single-pointedly for long enough to let the mind break through into a direct understanding that's not usual conceptual understanding, because the koans aren't like that. So that's the kind of Rinzai approach. And we don't know exactly how Dogen used koans. He doesn't get into kind of the technical practice with them. Obviously he loved them and he talked about them all the time, but people, Dogen scholars, propose that he would talk about them all the time, bring them up to have them percolate into the mind and shift our perspectives while we're listening in Dharma talks or studying koans, and kind of loosen up the mind. But he probably did not say, this is the focus of your Zazen, don't ever stray from this story in Zazen. Instead, he, in Zazen, let go of all stories. So this seems to be the difference. Yeah, so it's more like koans being used outside of Zazen, and maybe if they are used in Zazen, it's when they naturally arise. It's not so much that you're wrestling with a koan, as he says here. So, because this, like, Dogen's Shikantaza, which is another name for this Jijiyu Zamai, is, just sitting, letting go of all the contents, all the conceptual contents of the mind. But because people don't appreciate this Jijiyu Zamai. Some hurry on their way to gain enlightenment by wrestling with koans. Some struggle within themselves, searching for the true person that sees and hears. Is another Zen technique. In a way, like a koan, like there's the classic koan statements. They're not so much a story, it's more like the question, like, what is your original face before your parents were born? Or who is this? The one who sees and hears. Again, Dogen may talk about this sometimes, but it sounds like when commenting very directly on Jijiyu Zamai here, we're saying it's not even this investigation into who is this. Now, I really appreciate that investigation, and I sometimes use myself. And maybe even struggling with koans could be useful too. But when talking about Jijiyu Zamai, it's a little different than a strong, almost like splitting the mind into an investigator and this true self that sees and hears. Or you could hear it as, he says literally, some struggle within themselves searching for the true person that sees and hears. So we may be able to do this investigation in a non-struggling way that is similar to Jijiyu Zamai. But here's actually what Menzan says about the problem with this. He says, searching for the subject that he sees and hears is useless, because the harder you look for the subject, the more you will tire of wastefully struggling, since what is seeking and what is being sought cannot be separated. Understand that your eyes cannot see themselves. So it may be that we can directly look and see that there isn't somebody there to find, but if we're struggling trying to find somebody who is the source of all seeing and hearing, obviously there isn't one. It can be a technique to look, but if we're struggling trying to get a hold of something that actually there, pinpoint somebody at the source, to grasp Buddha nature in some conceptual way, then we're going off track. So some wrestle with koans, some struggle within, searching for the true person that sees and hears. Some try to rid themselves of delusory thoughts in order to reach a pleasant place of no mind or no thought. This would be like, again, making this strong effort to try to rid oneself of thinking, to stop thinking in a kind of forceful way. We might have tried such a thing. And he's saying, no, this is again, these are all common ways of practicing Zazen that he's saying are not quite right. He says, arousing the mind to eliminate illusory thoughts is like pouring oil on a fire to extinguish it. The fire will blaze with increased strength. So we might have experienced such a thing, right? It's like you're using the kind of self-effort to try to stop the thoughts that are being generated by the self. It's disturbing to try to stop disturbance. How do we say in the song of the trusting mind? We say, like be serene without striving activity in the oneness of things, and erroneous views will disappear by themselves. When you try to stop activity to achieve passivity, your very effort fills you with activity. When you try to stop mental activity to achieve passivity or peace, calm abiding, your very effort to try to stop the activity fills you with activity. Same point. Many other methods of practicing Zazen were advocated by various teachers in the Song, Yuan, and Ming dynasties in China, but it appears that fewer than 1 in 100 knew the true samadhi transmitted by the Buddhas and ancestors. Menzan goes on to say, if you were to encounter such a true dharma in the infinite eons of transmigration, in the rounds of birth and death, even one day of your life would be more precious than millions of years without the true dharma. So devote yourself diligently to this samadhi, cherishing every second. This has been several days of kind of him, Menzan, celebrating how wonderful this Jijiyu Zamai is and how precious a gift it is. But he's just named it all these things and said what it's not, right? But what is it? How do you practice it? Now I will explain in detail the way to clarify and rely on this samadhi. Ready? This is done simply by not clouding the light of yourself. When I first heard that, I just almost laughed, because it's like, finally, he's going to explain it. He's going to tell us what to do. Just don't cloud the light of yourself. What kind of technique is that?
if you think of thoughts as clouds, then any kind of intention or mental activity to try and disperse or get rid of those clouds is just another cloud.
Yep, that's right. To try to remove the clouds is more cloudiness. What is the light or the brightness, the kōmyō of the self? It could maybe also translate as this: the way to clarify and rely on the samadhi is done by simply not blocking your own true brightness. And self, you know, is a tricky term in Buddha Dharma. We have to make sure this doesn't mean some independent, fixed, substantial, abiding essence of who we are, because one of the Buddha's main teachings is that there isn't such a thing, on Atman. There is no abiding self at the core. But then in Zen tradition, sometimes they use kind of like self with a capital S, big self, Jikko. Uh, who we truly are, that's not a fixed, abiding, permanent, substantial entity, but more like this light, this brightness. And not just a Zen thing, because you may have heard that in the Mahayana Parinirvana Sutra, one of the sources of the Buddha nature teachings, that one of the qualities or ways of describing Buddha nature is Atma Paramita, which could be translated as like transcendent self, which makes this sutra very kind of controversial in many ways, because Buddha, one of the fundamental teachings of Buddha is anatman. There is no atman. Atman meaning a permanent, essential, independent entity of self. That's what the Buddha is denying through and through. And yet this Mahayana Sutra comes along and says, all beings without exception have Buddha nature. And one of the names for this Buddha nature is actually the self, Atman. But it's a kind of transcendent self. Paramita could be translated as transcendent or beyond. We say wisdom beyond wisdom, usually referring to these six paramitas, these six perfections, or literally these six practices that go beyond themselves, transcend themselves. So we can translate like the perfection of giving, maybe more literally could be translated as transcendent giving, or giving that goes beyond all our ideas of giving. That's where paramita is used in that way. So this Atma Paramita is like the self that's beyond all ideas of the self. We could say the true self. And it's not some fixed abiding thing. It's brightness. And the practice of Jijiyu Zenmai is to not cloud this brightness of your true transcendent self. When the light of the self, of this self, is clear, you follow near neither dullness nor distraction. Kind of nice. It's awesome. If the light of your true nature is shining brightly, then we don't get caught up in dullness, because the light is bright, or distraction, because the distraction blocks the light. So those are kind of the two extremes that we get to enjoy during Zazen, are when that long hot afternoon comes, often it's the dullness side of things. It's just like, I think I'm still here, but like, what? Zazen? What's happening here again? Dull, sleepy, hazy, no energy. Sometimes that's how I think of dullness. Is, sometimes I notice my Zazen. It goes through different periods of the day and different phases of my life, I've noticed. Used to be that the early morning Zazen was like the most bright and clear, but lately the early morning Zazen has been a little bit more of the dull, and it's like not actually sleepy, but more like, I think of it for myself, my experience is more like the mind has no energy to like stay with the practice. It's kind of like, well, I know that I'm like really, my mind's really wandering off. Come on, Kokyo, come back to the present. And it's like, no. It just won't do it over and over. It's like, it has no, It's like an energetic thing. I don't know if anyone, if that experience sounds familiar. Like, I know that I'm distracted, and I think Zazen just takes some energy, right, to stay with the present. It's not so much that I'm really caught up in some obsessive thoughts. It's just like meaningless, dribbling kind of distraction. Not so obsessive, but more just like there's no energy to stay present. Whereas if you're really bright and clear, it's like you can almost like the power of intention becomes much stronger. And it's like you can just decide more easily, okay, we'll just return now. And the mind's like delighted to just, yes, sir. Sometimes it's like that. And then distraction is the other, when we're just, you know, really caught up in that, and not this underlying dull stream of meaningless dribble, but more like really kind of like trying to work something out, work out some conceptual scheme. and that, maybe we do have a lot of energy to do that sometimes, but it also pulls us away from this brightness in the middle. So the third ancestor, Kanchi So San Dai Yosho, in the Shin Shin Ming, the Song of the Trusting Mind, said, it's empty, clear, and self-illuminating with no exertion of the mind's power. Yeah, the Song of the Trusting Mind that we chant in the mornings here is only one third of this long poem, because it's too long to chant. And I think it's the juiciest first third of the poem. But it goes on and on in the same spirit. And this line, we don't chant this line in the sutra book, but later in the poem, there's this line talking about the trusting mind, the mind of Zazen, the mind that doesn't hold preferences, this samadhi. And it looks like, I hear this as almost like the central instruction of this long, this is a couple pages, but Menzan's essay is about 20 pages long. He seems to be like, the heart of Dogen Zazen is this line from the Song of the Trusting Mind. So I really, and I feel like the more I contemplate this, the more I feel like that is so beautiful that he picked out this line. I just feel like it's a wonderful Zazen instruction. You could say the whole Song of the Trusting Mind is a Zazen instruction, but this is particularly about this mind, this kind of samadhi, this self-receiving and functioning awareness. Again, the line is, it's empty, clear, and self-illuminating with no exertion of the mind's power. Or another translation is, when the cloudless light illuminates itself, there is no need to make mental struggle. There is no waste of energy. Part of why I appreciate this line so much is it's a kind of classic description of Buddha nature that you may have heard this in this room many times when exploring Buddha nature, that it's like these two qualities of Buddha nature is, it's completely, and Buddha nature, what we mean by Buddha nature is the nature of this mind, like the actual way our mind is we're endowed with from birth to death, is that it's empty, meaning like it has no fixed characteristics. We can't find this mind. It has no location, no color or shape. It's empty of all fixed reference points are the nature of our mind, has no conceptual graspability. It can give rise to lots of concepts and thoughts, but the actual nature is completely empty of anything we can possibly think about it or get a hold of it. And it's empty, and it's not just like an empty, like, no nothingness kind of thing, right? It's clear and aware. So that's the kind of classic Indian descriptions of Buddha nature, is it's our true, the nature of our mind is completely empty of any fixed characteristics, and yet it's clear, radiant, aware, alive, bright. It's not at all nothing, because here it is, shining forth every moment. We can't escape this awareness. And usually the clarity and awareness aspect of Buddha nature is kind of always basically operating. When there's a lot of dullness, it's still the Buddha nature clarity is still there, but it's obscuring it some. But right now, this kind of like our just the fact that we're experiencing the this event is actually the clarity aspect of Buddha nature. Our just normal awareness and awakeness and clarity. But what we're not aware of is the empty aspect. Like the clarity aspect is naturally happening as soon as we open our eyes in the morning, strictly speaking, even when we're asleep and in our dreams. The awareness of mind, it can be quite subtle, but there's an awareness that's still continuing. We don't have to do anything about it or create it or make it more aware or anything like that. But the part that most people are not aware of is the empty aspect, because it seems like there are reference points. There are things. Reference points are like this, you know, this is a book stand in front of me. It's like, that's like maybe 1,000 different reference points to kind of like make sure this is like this. the mind naturally does this. It projects reference points to get a hold of something, so we can call it a book stand and use it as a book stand and ask somebody else to pick up the book stand. Very useful, these reference points, but it's they're not really part of what's happening. It's a kind of just a way the mind is constructs a bunch of separate things. Like my teacher Tenzin Roshi likes to say, the world actually doesn't come to us in packages. It comes as just a one inconceivable suchness, but then our mind can't really deal with that, so we package the world into like book stands, books, floors, people, things, largely through naming, the naming function of the mind, and conceptualization. We package this oneness into manyness.
Idea of self that I think of as composed of memories, habits, preferences, things mm-hmm. like that. Is that just part of the one suchness that this mind is reflecting or illuminating?
Yeah, you could say from that that it's not even really like that, but the packaging aspect of our mind creates the appearance of our personality and our karmic tendencies and the five skandhas.
What is it really like?
It's inconceivable. Buddha nature, that's the thing. We can't pinpoint it as it's really like this. Although there are, of course, many things that can be said, you know, a little bit clunky because they're in words. Like we can call it the transcendent self, or we can call it brightness or light, or we can call it the union of emptiness and clarity. We can call it awareness with no fixed reference points. We can call it non-duality. Those are all... any one of those things creates a slight conceptual version of it. But you could even say, from that nature of mind, from that basis, from that ground of mind, amazingly, miraculously, comes forth five skandhas, body and mind, a world of experience, a human life, many packages wrapped up in nice bows, some of which we're overjoyed to receive, some of which we send back, postage paid. We like to send back. Wish we could send back. But the nice thing is we don't actually really have to send them back because they're not actually real packages. We can let the packages dissolve back into the nature that created them. So the way to clarify and rely on this samadhi is done by simply not clouding or blocking the brightness of this Buddha nature, of your true self. And the central line of the Xin Xin Ming, the trusting mind, it's empty, clear, and self-illuminating. Particularly empty and clear is this really wonderful pair that almost sounds contradictory, because if it's completely empty of any fixed characteristics, isn't the clarity kind of a characteristic? But it's the kind of clarity that's beyond characteristics. And it's the middle way. It's this pair that creates a middle way without falling into an emptiness as nothingness, since there's no fixed characteristics. What is there then? Well, there's clarity, clear, or awareness, or brightness. Then is that some substantial thing? Is it a real, can we get a hold of this clarity, bright awareness? No, because it's completely empty. So these two sides work together as a description of our true nature. It's empty, clear, and self-illuminating. Means it naturally comes forth from itself. This awareness doesn't come from something outside of itself. With no exertion of the mind's power. In other words, to rest as Buddha nature is not a matter of exerting the mind's power to let's get down to the core here and somewhere in here, push this stuff away, let's try a little bit harder. It's not like that, actually. This Buddha nature is naturally self-illuminating, or you could even translate it as naturally illuminating, naturally shining, empty and clear, and it is that way always, with no exertion of the mind's power to make it that way. We don't have to polish this tile to make this Buddha nature mirror. So then what's practice then if there's no if there's no exertion of the mind's power needed, and that seems to be the art of what he's exploring here. It's not a matter of trying to get rid of thoughts or think. This is the vital point of the practice and realization of this samadhi. All is empty, clear, and self-illuminating means the light of the self shines brightly. Sort of saying the same thing. This is a comment on these two sections. All is empty, clear, and self-illuminating means the light of the true self shines brightly. No exertion of the mind's power means not to add the illusory mind's discrimination to the reality. Pretty straightforward. Maybe we still wonder how to do that, but that's what it means. No exertion of the mind's power means not to add illusory mind's discrimination, which is what's usually happening, to this reality of empty, clear awareness. When you make mental struggle, the light becomes illusory mind and brightness becomes darkness. So you could say, it appears this way. When you make mental struggle, for example, figure out this Buddha nature and get a hold of it somehow. Then the light of the Buddha nature becomes illusory mind, and the brightness that's naturally here becomes darkness. You could say it doesn't really become darkness. The brightness is never disappears, but it seems to become dark and obscured. The mental struggle obscures the Buddha nature that's always shining. So when you make mental struggle, the light becomes illusory mind and brightness becomes darkness. If you do not make mental struggle, the darkness itself becomes the self-illumination of the light. When you stop making struggle, I just give up here, I surrender, but not in the... This is the fine art of Zazen, right? I completely give up trying to do anything, but not in a lazy way of just like, and now I just go to sleep. More like I'm awake, alert, and present, and I completely let go of any effort to do anything here. Then the darkness that's like all the kind of effort and trying to work out this machine, that kind of darkness, dissipates, and the brightness that's already here before we create it just reveals itself. Do you have some sense of this? Maybe in your zazen, a little bit? Yeah.
No, I'm thinking when he says he illuminates the light, that seems like kind of strange when he said you illuminate light. I was thinking of like dust particles in light. Like a beam of light, you can't see the beam of light unless you stick something in kind of
a fire like that. Yeah, that's true. Mm-hmm. That's a nice metaphor because, yeah, light is just a metaphor here, right? But like, because we can't really say, well, it's beyond all words and description, but light's a very nice metaphor because light, you can't see light. Like, there's light filling the room and but you don't see the light itself. You just see what it illuminates, like the book stand. With light hitting the book stand, you see that. Or dust particles in the beam of light, show us that there is light. So it's almost like we know that we're awake and aware because there's objects that, in a way, are kind of obscuring the full brightness. But... these objects kind of prove that we're awake and aware. We're aware of objects. So then this kind of quite tricky thing here, or seemingly tricky thing, is there a way to be aware without the objects? Or like without, to have light without dust particles? Or maybe another way to say it would be, there can still be dust particles, but we're emphasizing the light or we're attending to the light rather than the particles. That's the unusual thing in this kind of samadhi. We're attending to something that you can't see and you can't get a hold of. And we don't need to stop the dust particles. That would be like trying to stop your thinking. But here's the dust particles we can see. Now, how do we pay attention to the light that's illuminating them? Yes. Yeah, not to add the illusory mind's discrimination.
By parsing it out between light and discrimination.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, adding something that's not already here. Because you could say the whole thing is here. There's the light and the dust floating in it. So don't add more dust, like the dust that tries to get rid of the dust. Like adding something more. Or subtract anything. Like also this Song of the Trusting Mind says, the way is perfect like vast space with nothing lacking and nothing extra. So if there's dust in vast space, it's not extra. And there's nothing lacking either. So we don't need to add anything or subtract anything. If you don't make mental struggle, the darkness itself becomes the self-illumination of the light. So it's, he also asked about how can light be with self-illumination of light. And I don't know how it looks in Japanese, but it's just emphasizing that there's light and that it's naturally illuminating, it's self-illuminating. It's not created through some causes and conditions. That would be another way to hear. This Buddha nature is naturally always shining, not dependent on our practice or any conditions at all. It's unconditioned brightness, which is inconceivable. This is similar to the light of a jewel illuminating the jewel itself. For example, it's like the light of the sun or moon illuminating everything. Mountains and rivers, human beings and dogs, etc. equally, without differentiation or evaluation. So this is metaphors. A bright jewel. A bright, warm jewel that illuminates itself. It's naturally bright. It doesn't have light shining on it to make it bright. Or an alternative metaphor, like the light of the sun or moon that illuminates everything, all people and dogs, without discrimination. Like the, you know, shines and everything. I think they're quite simple but really beautiful metaphors, I think, so that you can maybe think of it in your zazen when you're caught up in whatever. See, is there some aspect of my mind, can I open to this aspect of my mind that's just aware of everything equally with no discrimination? Doesn't mean it doesn't know whether it's a dog or a person. It just means it doesn't care whether it's a dog or a person. It doesn't prefer.
Or
does
it know whether it's self or not self?
Yeah. It shows everything accurately and completely, but it can't distinguish between itself and the dog, or between the dog and the person, in a way that kind of ranks them or prefers one over the other. Also, a mirror reflects everything without bothering to discriminate. I love that translation. the mirror doesn't bother to discriminate. It's not like it tries to not discriminate. It just doesn't bother discriminating. So this, partly the reason I brought this up is there's a whole really beautiful description of this mirror metaphor that we're working with this year that it will be tomorrow's talk. About how to see this nature of mind like a mirror that doesn't bother to discriminate. He gets into quite some detail about the mirror here. In this self-enjoyment samadhi, just keep the light unclouded without being concerned with the discrimination of objects. This is the meaning of Hongzhi's expression in Zazen Xin that some of you might have been here when we studied this a couple sessions ago. The essential function of all Buddhas, the functional essence of all ancestors, knowing without touching things, illuminating without facing objects. This is this poem about this, another way of talking about this mind. It's knowing without touching things as external to mind, illuminating without facing objects. Facing objects, poetic language for it. Illumining, but usually a light, like we're talking about, the light illumines objects, like colors and things. But this is the kind of illumination that doesn't face or meet objects. It's an objectless light or objectless illumination. And it's a knowing. Knowing is another word. Another word for this awareness or clarity or brightness. So it's a knowing, but usually we know things. We know this is a book and a book stand. This is a very unusual kind of knowing, but without touching things. Knowing that doesn't know things, doesn't contact an object. Illumining without facing objects. So, right, so this isn't very practical instruction. It's just a way in detail to clarify and rely on this samadhi. And I don't think he's intentionally saying there is a secret technique here that I just don't want to give you. I think it's because it's such a subtle realm of mind that it's not about some, and no technique actually will get at it. In a way, techniques can be adding more darkness to the light. Just try to do something here. Even like, and we have great techniques that are great to approach this, like really let go, release thinking about the past and future, and settle into the present moment. That's kind of a straightforward, difficult, but simple instruction. And that would be like an approach. And so forget, if this sounds way too obscure and weird, I think that practice is maybe challenging, but tangible. In a way. And then, what are we left with? If we really let go of our thinking about the past and the future, settle into the present moment. At the very bottom of this present moment, it's empty, clear, and self-illuminating with no exertion of the mind's power. So, that's not so much a technique, it's more like that's a description of the suchness of what is. But in the realm of suchness, there are no approaches or techniques towards it in a way. So he's kind of coming, and the kind of classic Zen thing is usually like that. Dogen's like that too, right? He doesn't give so many practical things. is more like speaking from this place of suchness and calling us in to just find this inconceivable, radiant, empty awareness. And here, anything that seems important to clarify before we continue with another 10 or 12 periods of zazen? Yes.
How does this relate at all to what you said a few days ago about lighting a big candle?
Oh yeah, so Sheen is like, I said something like, so Sheen's like, we're creating a big offering candle to the Buddha. We're all helping put the wax together and making this big offering through the forms. It's like through the practices that we do, taking care of each other and taking care of each thing as it comes, and which, by the way, you all are doing so beautifully, and it's kind of a small sesshin, so everybody has many roles, and you'll have even more as time goes on. And it's happening beautifully.
And we are the wax.
And we're like the wax, and we're making this this candle like that. But then we can light it. And light it would be like where it's, we're just being the candle, or we bring this kind of awareness, we bring this empty clarity to the forms. Because if you just have the structure of sesshin without lighting it, then it's not the complete offering. But then if you're trying to light something but you don't have something to light, then it's too abstract. That's why, or it's too like, We want to create something to light here. That's why I think we have sesshin. We're creating a very particular structure, very structured kind of thing, right? To light. But if we just kind of go through the motions and like, okay, this is it. And without really like being it completely, then it gets kind of tedious, does it not? This again? Another Oriyoki meal? Like, what's that all about? But if we light the meal with their just presence, then it's a full, complete offering to Buddha. And, you know, I might see like, well, am I lighting it or not? Well, now we may be here, there's a way to light the candle of the sesshin structure with no exertion of the mind's power. Like, it takes some exertion of the mind's power to like, you remember how to ring the bells and serve the meals and sit upright and all of these things take some exertion of the mind's power. But then, is there within all these activities, is there already a lit flame with no exertion of the mind's power? It's self-illuminating candle. How about that? We don't have to light it, actually. Thank you for bringing that up, because it might be like, we think, oh, how can I light? It is kind of tedious. How can I light this candle? The candle's getting, it's like melting in the heat of the sun, but it's not actually doing its candle brightness thing. You know, maybe we don't really light it, because it's self-illuminating. With no exertion of the mind's power, not adding some extra thing to some special thing we have to do on top of what we're already doing. And that not adding something special on top of what we're already doing is the not adding anything extra. We offer any merit arising today to the complete awakening of all beings. May they enjoy their candle burning brightly. Beings are numberless. I vow to save them. Delusions are inexhaustible. I vow to end them. Dharma gates are boundless. I vow to enter them. Buddha's way is unsurpassable. I vow to become it.